So we started the topic yesterday of having order in one's life, having order in one's mind. Seder ha-chayim matchil b'derech eretz. The first type of order that a person has is in his surroundings. B'nikayon ha-guf, the way that one takes care of his body, the cheder megurim, and one's room. I think many roommates would agree with this point over here. That's where it all starts. Zmanei sheina, the time that a person goes to sleep and that a person eats. The time that a person goes to sleep, the challenge in waking up is really a challenge in going to sleep on time. It's hard to go to sleep on time sometimes. It's harder than waking up. Because there's always one more thing you could do, and there's always other people doing other things, and to just pause. For a person to be proactive in active things is not so hard, but to be proactive in a passive thing is hard. Right? To go to sleep. It doesn't make sense, right? You have to actively not be active. It's a hard, challenging thing to do. But when a person trains themselves, it's a question of habit. It's just a question of habit. And there are ways to learn habits. When a person gets into the habit of, at this time I just stop. Or, if I've read a certain amount and I know, my thought comes to me that it's late, I just close the book. And that becomes their habit, then they're able to go to sleep on time. Mashallah ma'adav adome. Imagine you have a child, and the child hits his brother, and whenever the child hits his brother, then you as a parent shout at the child. And that's what you've always known to do. One child hits another child, you shout. So it's a natural cause and effect. Child hits, you shout. Now you do that for many years, and nothing ever very valuable comes from it, but you just keep doing that because that's the habit you've got into of the response you're supposed to give. What response do you give? Shout. Good. Then one day you go to another family for Shabbos, and you see the one child hits the other child, and you see that they relate to the whole topic in a totally different way. They go up to the child who was hit, and they give them a lot of attention and see they're okay, whilst the child who was hitting doesn't get attention, which makes much more sense than shouting at the child who hit and then he gets more attention, which will feed into his wanting to hit. And then after giving attention to the child who was hit, they go to the other child and they say, what was your need? What was bothering you? And they speak through whatever the issue happened to be, and then they say in a positive way, when that happens again, speak to me. When that happens again, speak it out with him. They give some like very practical, positive suggestion of what to do with it. And the other parent is like, does that work? But they see that it works. They see that it makes a difference. And they see that the next time there's less friction between the children. And they go like, I never thought to do that. So then you say, well, so then what are you going to do next time? They go, oh, I'm going to do that. Then the child is like, and they shout again. So why did you shout again? I don't know, it's just my habit. I've been doing that for many, many years. People continue to do bad habits, knowing that they're bad, but it's because they got into a habit of doing them. And many things in Avodas Hashem are not difficult in the understanding of them. They're pretty easy in the understanding of them. But just one has got into a habit of acting in a certain way, and they don't know that they can do it differently. And all you need is to create a trigger in your mind that instead of A follows on from B, rather, after B, you could do C. Meaning you're used to, this is what I do, okay? This is what I do. I read, I see that it's interesting, I say in my mind, I should probably go to sleep, and then I read more. That's the trigger that I've got in my mind. I have to say that phrase, I should be going to sleep, and that just opens the door for the next page, right? And that's what happens. Now, you could break that trigger. That trigger is not helpful for you. It's bad for you. The proof that it's bad for you is that you probably feel guilty every time you get to the end, and it's really late. So what you have to do is you have to first identify that you have a negative trigger, that you're stage A leads onto stage B, which is not what you want, and then say to yourself, well, what should I do? What could I make? And then you say to yourself, maybe even write it down, it's quite helpful, and you say, when the thought comes to me that I should probably go to sleep, I follow that with closing the book. And if you do that 3-4 times, maybe some more, but at least 3-4 times, just to get it in kind of a second nature to yourself, then it will become the nature. When that thought comes to you, you close the book. Some people do, and I'm not recommending this, they take a neder for this to work. Because once you've made the neder, then it's very powerful. Meaning, as a trigger, they take a neder. And they say, when such and such happens, I swear they'll do such a thing. And that's a terrible thing to do, because then if they break it, then they've broken a neder. But you can do the same effect as a neder without actually taking a neder, just by making a trigger in your mind of, I have an alternative way to act in a certain way. I can do way A, and then I recognize it, and then I go on to point B. If you really want to be harsh about it, you could say, and if I don't, then you give yourself some small penalty. The next day, I'm not allowed to read my book at all. Right? If that happens to me one day. And that strengthens it in a certain way. But a lot of Avodas Hashem is really easy. It's really easy. It's just that you're in a bad habit. And therefore, you're not used to doing it in a healthy way. But the moment you recognize that all that's happening is a bad habit, and you can break that bad habit in the method that we just said, noticing where the trigger takes you the way it shouldn't be, thinking of a more appropriate trigger, meaning what that should lead to, writing it down, doing it a few times consciously, and then afterwards it'll be second nature. And then many, many aspects of your Avodat Hashem will just be second nature for you. You won't have to work on them with an intensity. There won't be a challenge. It's interesting, Rav Yisrael Salanter writes in his Sefer Or Yisrael, he says, and this works for the positive and for the negative. It's quite a harsh thing, but it works positive and negative, which is good and bad, right? He says that if a person does something bad once, and they're conscious of it, and then twice, and they're less conscious of it, and third time, fourth time, fifth time, and then now they're not conscious of it anymore, and it's become second nature to them, the fact that they're not thinking about it anymore as a bad thing doesn't make it any less bad, right? As an example, let's say that there was a person, we'll call him Metushelach, because there's no one I know called the Shas. That's a good example of this person. So let's say Metushelach, he never used to speak Lashon Hara, but he started speaking Lashon Hara. And the first time he spoke Lashon Hara, it was the biggest thing for him, and he like felt very guilty about it, but he got a lot of positive encouragement from his friends, so he was able to pass that. He did it the second time, he spoke Lashon Hara again, still felt quite guilty, not as much. Fourth, fifth, sixth time. Now, for the rest of his life, he speaks Lashon Hara very free without feeling any guilty conscience. Does that make it less bad? Not at all. It's still Lashon Hara. In the eyes, the fact that for you it's second nature now doesn't make it any worse. Doesn't make it any less worse, sorry. It's still the same level of error. If someone feels really bad about eating treif, the first time they eat treif, second time, third time, fourth time, and now they just eat treif without thinking about it, it doesn't make it less of an avera. Just the fact that they're not conscious of it anymore. That's in the negative. It also works in the positive. And that's what's relevant over here. If a person takes on a good practice, and the first time they do it, it's a big effort for them, but they do a good thing, and then the second time it's less of an effort for them, and by now it's got to the point where for them to do good things is second nature. Let's say, for example, some people speak to their parents in a way which is not fitting. They shout at their parents, or they complain about their parents to their parents, right? And then they work on themselves, and they get to a point where they speak to their parents in a very respectful manner. And at the beginning, it's a very big challenge for them to do that. But they have to stop themselves and bite their tongue from saying what they want to naturally say, what until now was natural to them. But they force themselves in order to be respectful, to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av v'eim. And after a few times, it becomes much easier, and then it becomes totally natural. Does that mean they get less reward now for doing kibud av v'eim because it's not hard for them? Not at all. Not at all. There's a different thing which is called lefum tzara agra, which is that you get more reward when something's difficult. But that doesn't take away from the mitzvah aspect. It's a separate thing. The avera is still the avera, the mitzvah is still the mitzvah. So when a person habituates themselves to do good, it's a false thought that, oh, so it's not valuable anymore. Now it's just my second nature. It's just a habit now. So it's just a habit. So it's not good. That's not true. If a person habituates himself to being a tzaddik, and there's no more fighting to be good, to be on a good level, then that becomes his natural level. When you go up to Shamayim, and they judge you by what's become second nature to you, because that's your true level. If you're still fighting about something, it's not yet your true level. It's good that you're fighting about it. You're rising up. But things that have become second nature to you, that means that's you. Right? Things that you've made your second nature, that means that's become who you are. When you go up to Shamayim, they're not going to say, oh, for him it was easy. They're going to say, for him, it became who he was. And this is who's coming before us. This is a person who's a tzaddik rising up before us now to this next world. And therefore, make an agenda of noticing things that you do which are inappropriate. Noticing that a lot of them are just bad habits. That this came and therefore you did that. And you feel guilty about it. But you just don't know how to stop. And it's a very simple thing, how to stop it. Notice the trigger. Write down to yourself what would be a more appropriate follow-up to do after the trigger takes place. something very concrete and clear and easy to do, like in the case of the book, close the book, or in the case of some inappropriate image, close the phone, or do something else positive, find some other alternative trigger which is a positive one. And then the first few times, could be about a month of practicing, doing it another way, 30 days, maybe 40 days, maximum 40 days, maybe more, but it should be between 30 and 40 days, that should be enough, if you're doing it constantly, of the trigger the other way, and then that will be your default. And once that's your default, then you shouldn't have an issue with that topic. Maybe there'll be this strong Yetzer Hara now and then, what will attack you, but it could be. But as a natural, it won't be a challenge anymore. And that's Seder, making your life orderly in an orderly manner. Halimud v'avoda mekablim Seder na'ot. Your learning, your avodas Hashem, gets an order. Mala akdim, mala acher, kama lelamed, kama lachzor, kama leechol, kama lanuach. I once heard a funny thing. At the Chaim of Brisk said this. Rav Chaim Brisk used to give a daily shir. And he had a cup of water. And some days he would drink a third of the cup, and sometimes a half of the cup, and sometimes three quarters. Every day a different amount. So Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, like, how come you drink a different amount every day? And he said to them, what, you just drink however much is in the cup? Like, I drink however much I need. It was such a funny thing. Like, people here who buy a can of Coke, right? It says 330 milliliters. Did it ever occur to someone to stop after 200 milliliters because I've had enough? No, it's 330, so I drink 330. Because that's what's there. But is that what's good for you? Is that really good for you? You know, there's a version of the Mishnah Berurah called Bayitzchak Yikare, which has footnotes of Rav Nevinson, Rav Vigdin Nevinson. It has his Ha'orus. So at one point there, it's talking about Baal Tashchis. And he says, what happens if you took more food than you need? Right, and now you're satiated. You've had enough. What should you do? So you know what he writes? He says, Baal Tashchis of the Neshama is greater than Baal Tashchis of the Guf. Meaning, it's better to throw away the food and not overeat. And you say, oh, it's Baal Tashchis? Your mother might say, it's wasting food. It's wasting. You shouldn't have taken more to begin with. But now that you've taken that more food and it's going to go to waste, it's better that the food goes to waste than your middos go to waste. Or he says your neshama goes to waste. By you eating more food than you need to eat. That's a very powerful statement. So a person should figure out, how much do I need to eat? And then eat accordingly. Sometimes in the yeshiva there's this sense of, there's meals at a certain time and I only can eat at those times, so let me eat as much as I can. Have you ever been to a hotel? People eat at a hotel roughly three times the amount they would eat at a normal, if it's a buffet. If it's a buffet, they eat roughly three times the amount they would normally eat at home. Because there's this, and they usually end up throwing away more than they've taken, more than they actually were able to eat. Right? The hotels waste so much because they know people will just have very, very wide eyes. Because I can take all of this. And it happened in the old age homes as well. The old age homes people, they're not able to eat so much. But there's only food twice a day being served. So they come and they fill their plates and they come back and they can only eat a tiny amount, but there's an opportunity. People who have order in their life, they know how much they need to eat. They've worked it out. I remember in yeshiva, there was one point where I used to, when a certain meal, I used to have two sandwiches, like four pieces of bread. I don't know why I did that, but I just did that. And then I was learning this topic, I don't know if it was here or somewhere else, but I said, is that how much I need to eat? I had no idea. I had no idea if that's how much I needed to eat. I just didn't know. I said, well, let me try from now on having one sandwich and see what happens. And not only was I satiated, but, excuse me, I had less wind coming up. Is that okay to say that? Right? In other words, I realized I'd been overeating without realizing it. I never experimented. I never paid attention. And for me, one sandwich was enough. But there's more bread there, so take more. Why not? Because it's Baal Tashchis for the neshama. Only when you start making order a priority in your life, do you start noticing these things. Order in how much. Some people don't even know how much they need to sleep. People say, how much do you sleep? 8 hours. 8 hours? Is that true for everyone? No, it's not true too. How much do you need to sleep? Some people just don't know. They have no idea. They have no idea how much they need to sleep. And they say, well, it says 8 hours in the Rambam. Okay, and what about for you? They go, I don't know. So that's not order in one's life. Person has to figure out how much they need to sleep, how much they need to eat, how much they can learn. Make order. And make order takes thought and takes experimenting until you figure that out. Kama lilmod, kama lachzor. How much chazorah should you do? So you could bring a proof from the Gemara that it says four times. You could bring a proof that it says 40 times. You could bring that it says 101 times. They're all good proofs. What about you? What about you? So how much do you need to do chazara? It's very individual. however much you need to do chzorah, in order that you remember it, so that by the time you get back to your next cycle, you still remember it. And that's assuming you have a cycle, because someone who has order in his life has cycles, right, of his learning. So how much do you need to do chzorah? It's a very personal question. I don't know. Do you need to know? You need to know, because if you have order in your life, you will have figured that out. How many times do you need to do review in order to understand something fully? There's no right answers. It's you. Your order in your life will give you the answers. The pinnacle of order is inner order in one's thoughts. And that's the highest level of working on oneself, where a person is able to clarify his thoughts, prevent inappropriate thoughts from coming. When an inappropriate thought comes, he doesn't have to deal with it. When an appropriate thought comes, he's able to think about it at the appropriate time and in the appropriate way and know how to deal with it. He's able to identify within himself where that came from. Did it come from an appropriate place or an inappropriate place, and identify within his midas where it was? That's a level beyond. But first, the person should start with what's in his control. What's in his control is his actions, his room, his clothing, his sleep time, his eating time. All those things are more in your control than your thoughts. And when you've trained yourself to take control and have order in your external world, it's a lot easier to then take control and make order in your internal world. Not to say you should wait until you've done that, the external for the internal, but make it a priority initially to have order in things that are more tangible and external. This is all for the day-to-day. In our lives, we find sometimes that we're totally thrown. Matzavim shonim. Things happen which are out of order. They're not the normal order. We're in a period like that right now. Everything's out of order. ולעתים קרובות אנו מוצאים את עצמנו לפתע פתאום במצב חדש שטרם ידענו את מלכות חנו. And sometimes we find ourselves in a totally new situation that we had no idea of it coming, and we couldn't even prepare for it because we had no sense that this kind of situation was going to come our way. What do you do then? What do you do when you have your order? Now there's a whole new order that's come your way. אשרי היודע לסדר עצמו לפי עקרונות עבודתו ודעתו ואינו מאבד עשתונותיו ואינו נופל ברוחו. How great is one who's able to have order even in times where the situation doesn't call for it and he doesn't lose himself. So much just comes to my mind just trying to make order out of it. I once read a book, I'm sure other people in this book have read it as well, about doesn't come to my mind right now. Forgot the word for it, but it's a type of a stand-up comedy, improvisation comedy, where people will get on a stage, and without having prepared the scene at all, the people in the audience say a story, or a scene or a situation, and then they do a whole scene. A whole scene with a back and a forth and a whole give and a take and a whole story after hearing a brief story, and people in the crowd watch think it's amazing. How did they do that? And it's all improvisation. Like, everyone knows that they just heard that story for the first time now, and they have a whole back and forth scene that takes place from not having heard any background. How did they do it? So I read in this book, and then after I saw it at my son's school, they called these people to come and they did satire mini comedies of things that take place in the school, and my son told me, because his teacher told him, look out for this and you'll see how they do it. And it was fascinating. They have ready-made scripts of scenes that they do. They have about 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 ready-made scenes which have all the built-in jokes and all the same flows that all end up in the same place. And when they hear a story, then the main leader of the group identifies which of their ready-made scenes this story fits into best. And then he just says, and my son said to me, listen, he's going to say, I remember him said the word, Ruach Noshavet, right? The wind is blowing. They just said to each other, wind is blowing, and then they just started. Right? Wind is blowing. Okay, what does wind is blowing? No one here knows what wind is blowing means, but they know what it means. And they took that story and they knew, each one knew his role, what he has to do, and they just implanted that particular story that the teacher or the child had just told them into. So what is that? That's having order in a non-order situation. It's amazing, right? It's a situation which is a chaos situation. You don't know what story they're going to tell you or how to deal with it, right? But you've prepared yourself that you know how to have order in a non-order situation. People who do this very well also are, what are they called? Medical clowns? Is that what they call in English? people who like come to hospitals and they dress up as clowns and they make people laugh and make them, and they, so that's a very uncomfortable situation to be in, right? It's uncomfortable to be next to someone who's dying or with a family of someone who's dying, and then to try and bring them humor. How do you do that? How do you do that? But these people who know how to be comfortable in an uncomfortable situation, that's what they've learned how to do. Meaning, there's a type of an order that you have to learn for yourself when there's order. And for example, yeshiva. Yeshiva is a time where there's height of order. There's times for davening, there's times for eating, there's specific masechta that is being learnt, there's times when there's chugim. It's the height of order. Right? You can set up your whole year ahead of time. What you're going to do at this time, when you're doing a certain time, you can learn during the break, you can change things, but you have the height of order. But then there's benas manim. So a person who his whole life depends on strict order will do very well in yeshiva, but it will collapse in benas manim. Now he doesn't have a fixed time for davening, there's a shtibul nearby. When's he going to daven? Whenever he happens to wake up. Right, what's going to happen now? There's nothing forcing him to daven at a certain time. What's he going to learn? I don't know. No one told me what to learn. There's no fixed story. What's he going to do? He'll fall apart. A person has to have an order when there's order, be successful in order when the order is built for him, but also a person has to, like those improvisation comedians, has to know how to have order in hectic, chaotic times. You have to make for yourself certain things that are so rigid and priorities for you, that even when everything else around you is changing, values that you have won't change. So for example, if you learn in yeshiva because the yeshiva tells you to learn, then when it's ben azmanim, you may not learn. But if you learn in yeshiva because Torah learning is a priority for you, then in yeshiva it expresses itself through keeping storim, and outside yeshiva it will express itself by you making your own storim. Because where it comes from within you is Torah learning is a priority for me. I'm a Torah learning Jew. That's where it comes from. Then it will be expressed in a different form, in a different time, in a different place. You'll be able to reform and restructure yourself because you know your values. A person who comes to yeshiva and doesn't have values, he doesn't know what his values are, then he just goes with the flow of the structure that he's placed into. And that's good as long as he's in a good environment. But it's going to be terrible when he leaves. But a person who the reason why he comes to yeshiva is based on principles, not based on structure, based on principles. And those principles are expressed through a structure, then he will be able to take those principles and put them into a new structure when it's called for. So the answer to how to have order when there's no order is having very clear principles. When you know why you do what you do, when you know what your value system is, and you ask yourself, if I wouldn't have minyanim daily here, like for example in quarantine, right? If I wouldn't have strict times of learning, like in Bethlehem, what would I do? What would I do? And you have to ask yourself that question before you get to that situation. Because if you ask yourself beforehand, then when the situation comes your way, you can say, no, Torah is important to me, even if I'm not in this structure. And then you clarify your own values. Davening is important to me. Speaking respectfully is important to me. Even if I don't have a parent or a rabbi standing nearby me, speaking respectfully is still important to me as a value. It's an inherent value. Right? In elementary school, maybe kids wouldn't speak so respectfully, but because there's a teacher nearby, they're careful to speak respectfully. But if it's a value for you, and you've identified and clarified your value, then you'll speak respectfully even outside of the school, even on the street, even when you're playing with friends. So there's order in order, and there's order in chaos. And our obligation here is to identify our principles, that even when we're in a state of chaos, our principles will still hold us strong, and we will be able to create an inner order. You know, I just heard an amazing thing. Today they started Psachim, a new order of Daf Yomi. And I heard that in 1982, which is the year after I was born, there was a siyum of Daf Yomi. That was when the cycle happened. And in Yerushalayim, they had a big siyum in Yerushalayim. I think it was in Binyanei HaUmah. And there were four people in Yerushalayim who received a special award or a recognition because they had done Daf Yomi since Daf Yomi was founded. I think it was eight cycles. Eight cycles of Daf Yomi. Now, that's during World War II. You could not think of a more chaotic time than World War II. And these four people went through the Holocaust. I don't know exactly what the situation was or where they were, what access they had. But they went through the Holocaust, four people, and they did Daf Yomi every day. For eight cycles, including throughout the Holocaust. Times of poverty, times of suffering, times of persecution, That's order. If a person is able to not only have external structure, but even when everything is hectic and crazy, it will be very justified to put Daf Yomi on hold for the years of the Holocaust. It will be very justified. But a person who has order, where Torah learning is a priority to me, even if I'm not with my friends and not in my yeshiva, but it's a value for me, you're able to keep that order going even through those times. How fortunate is someone who's able to have an inner order? That's the value of a great person. Yosef was in Mitzrayim. Halo hu banav hayu bichlal shivim. Umipnei ma ba'al lamdeinu. Why did it have to tell us in the Torah that Yosef was in Egypt? He was there the whole time. It's coming to tell you, this is the first Rashi on Sefer Shmos. It's coming to tell you that Yosef was the same Yosef when he was the shepherd of his father's sheep. He was the same Yosef when he was in prison. And he was the same Yosef when he became a leader of the entire Egypt. He had an inner value system. His inner value system did not change an iota. Even though the external world changed for him, mi'akatzeh la'katzeh, stability of family, in prison tempted by Eshet Potiphar, and then in prison, and then the leader of all of Egypt, his value system did not change. He had an inner order. His inner value system kept him going. Mi'yisod ha'seder hu, gamkein, sh'adam yodeh la'seder atzmo b'matzav ruach shonim. Once a person starts working on order, he'll also be able to order himself when he has depression, sadness, upset. These things, he'll have a way of dealing with them. They won't throw him. Different moods that externally affect a person who has order, it's not that he won't have bad moods, but he'll know how to deal with bad moods. He'll be, when he hears a negative thought in his mind, he'll have a response to the negative thought. The inner critic that speaks within him, that with other people would lead them to depression, he will have a response. I know that voice, I know where it leads me, and I have a response to that inner critic, that it won't take me out of my values, won't take me out of my inner order. There's one more paragraph, but part of order is davening on time. So I'm going to pause there, and we'll read that one last five lines, Bez Hashem, next time.